is the Jason Ross Show.
What I do have are a very particular set of skills. Skills I've acquired over a very long career. Skills that make me a nightmare for people like you.
Here's Jason Ross.
It's a trailing Christie. He's going to go long distance. He's got the bucket. Here's a steal by Christie. Christie goes behind the back. Feeds to Keon Clark. Hammer rip. Asia Drobniak at the top of the circle. Hands to Barry. Steal. Christie. Breakaway. This is the way you top 100. With a reverse two-hand flush. 101-73. Christie with a double-double. 11 points. 13 assists. And a great ovation from the appreciative Kings fans.
You love hearing those old highlights of Doug Christie doing it back for the Kings at such an amazing level on both ends of the floor. One of the all-time favorite Kings, and we're pleased to be joined now by Doug Christie. Joining me, Jason Ross, here on CBS Sports 1140. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing good, Jason. How about yourself, buddy?
I'm doing great. It's great to catch up with you. Everything good? Your Jackie and your family, everybody's all good?
Yeah, everyone is doing good. Just working hard, buddy, that's all.
Well, what are you doing? How are you spending your time now that you're no longer an NBA player? What have you been up to these days?
Well, I homeschool our son, and I have an athletic consultant company that I started with two who I consider to be the absolute best trainers in the world. One guy from Seattle, Washington, named Tim Manson, and another from Toronto, Canada, named Sylvester Walters. And we just came out with a new piece of athletic equipment, and just working hard, man. That's what we're doing.
Well, and that's what you made in your career, as a hard worker with good talent, and it worked a very nice career for you. So I'm glad things are still going well with you. And you know, you've always been well-versed in what has been going on here with this city, and you've got your ties to Seattle. So I'd be curious, just from your own perspective on this Sacramento-Seattle saga and trying to get this team and the Kings trying to keep them here, just getting your perspective on that.
Well, you know, obviously it would be bittersweet because I have ties to both. Growing up as a kid in the Seattle area, I watched Gus Williams and Dennis Johnson and J.J. Freddie Brown and watched them win a championship, and was a Sonics fan until 79 when Magic came into the picture. I was a Laker fan the rest of the time, but my years in Sacramento were just absolutely awesome. I mean, they, in my opinion, are the best fans in the NBA. They come out, they support one of the loudest arenas around. And for them to lose a team, and not only lose a team, but lose a team, and we never got to grasp that holy grail for them. You know, I guess, you know, Seattle, they lost their team, but they didn't win the championship. Sacramento never got to have that parade going down in front of the Capitol building and really letting everybody know just how good of an organization and fans that they truly are. So it would be sweet for Seattle, obviously, to get a team back, because growing up there, you know, it was awesome. But I'd truly, truly be sad for Sacramento, because those two cities, both of them are deserving of NBA teams, no doubt, especially Sacramento. Being a smaller market team, you got your San Antonios, you got your Memphises, but no one, in my opinion, compares to Sacramento in that regard.
Yeah, and that's why it's so great that there are so many people here fighting to keep this team, and we all want that to happen and to keep the legacy of what a lot of you guys helped build. And you talked about the great fan base here. You had been around the league before you played here as a King. Did your perception change anymore? I mean, you knew it was a tough place to play as a visitor, but when you now became one of Sacramento's own, then they all welcome you in. Did you know it would be that great when you landed here?
No, you know, really, I had no idea. You know, like you said, coming in, Jason, when we came in to play, you always knew it was a hard place to play, no matter, you know, how they were playing or whatever. The fans were crazy. It was just a fun place to come play. And you have cities like that in the NBA, and Sacramento was definitely one of the tops. But when we got traded, I really didn't know what to expect. And the best thing that I likened it to is, and it was kind of weird, because Portland is kind of the same way. It's the only team in town. And when I was coming out of college, I had the ability to go and hang out with Jerome Kirstie, and he was a part of the Portland Trailblazers. And just watching how the city, you know, grasped onto the team and really supported the team and loved all the players, and I got to Sacramento, and I was just like, wow, it is really, really like that. You know, you've kind of likened it to a college town, but even more than that, I mean, everywhere you go, the people are showing you love. If the guys are losing, they're showing encouragement. If you're winning, they're ecstatic with you. It's the type of synergy that you truly, truly love as a player, and you miss when you're away from the game.
We're talking with former King Doug Christie. Doug said he would be willing to take questions from fans out there and listeners, so we'd welcome those in at 339-1140 or 1-800-920-1140. Doug, you talked earlier about how this city didn't quite get that Holy Grail, that championship, and you guys were the closest, so close. And I've talked to some of your former teammates, whether it's Lawrence Funderburk, Scott Pollard, Mateen Cleaves in the last couple of weeks, and they all kind of are still hanging on to that they – you guys just didn't quite get it. You were good enough. It just didn't happen. How much do you still think about that now that it's, gosh, almost 10, 11 years ago now?
Well, seeing that my son's favorite player is Kobe Bryant, I have to look at his face on my son's wall every day.
That's not fair.
I mean, he's a fantastic player, so at least it's somebody who is really good. I could appreciate that. But, you know, it's tough because as a professional, you work so hard to try to be the best. And when I got there in the 2000-2001 year, you know, we were coming up, and then we just slowly kept improving year by year. And that next step was that championship step, and we just never made it. And obviously, it's a credit to the Lakers, and you have to take your hat off to them at the same time, because we ran into two of the all-time greatest players in their absolute apex prime, being Shaquille O'Neal and Kobe Bryant. And, you know, a lot of teams felt that same way when Michael Jordan was in the NBA. You know, you had many, many really good teams that just couldn't get over the hump. Charles Barkley for one of them. When he was in Phoenix, and you have to go away with the ultimate respect, not only for the team that was ruling the era, but the game itself. And I take that away, no doubt.
You know what, Doug, I appreciate that, because what's interesting is, you know, obviously here in Sacramento, no one wanted to say anything Lakers, and just that was a dangerous word to say around here, and certainly in L.A., they didn't want to give the Sacramento Kings credit. I want you to hear this. A few weeks ago, we talked to Rick Fox, and he kind of shares the same sentiment you have, that, you know, he really, in the end, respected the Sacramento Kings.
We never gave the Kings the love they deserved or the respect they deserved outwardly. You know, everything was about maintaining this level of competitive arrogance and confidence, so that it was, you know, so it may be used as an edge. But you know, inside our inner circle, we had a lot of respect for the Kings and the players. And like I said, I can now interact with Chris Webber differently and openly talk about that. But then, you know, you wouldn't dare talk about it.
Yeah, and of course he works with C-Web on NBA TV, and it's just, you know, there was a time where, yeah, neither one would back down, and he would go on, too, to say that the Kings made them better, and I know you guys were made better by the Lakers, because that was some of the best basketball I think the league has seen in a long, long time.
No doubt about it. I think there's a definite mutual respect, you know, because when we stepped out onto the court, all of that kind of went away. And I think, you know, whether he said that or he didn't say that, I think that we knew, just because basketball is a physical game and you touch each other and you can feel the energy and things like that. And there was a respect there, but they were the champions, and they came out the champions when it was our time to step up, and you just really, really have to give them the respect that they deserve in that regard.
All right, I got more questions for Doug. I know some of you do, too, at 339-1140, 1-800-920-1140, as Doug Christie's kind enough to join us and take a few calls. Let's try Gordon in Sacramento. Gordon, you're on with Doug Christie.
Hey, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm fantastic. How are you, Gordon?
Good, thank you. First and foremost, I just want to say thank you for all you've done as being, when you were your time here as being a king. I know you did a lot for the community and stuff, too, so hats off to you, sir. When you first started out at NBA, who did you, like, look up to, or who did you have mentor you becoming the player you have and the person you are now, sir?
You know, that's an interesting question, actually. When I first mentioned Jerome Kersey, that was before I got into the NBA. But then as a rookie, I had James Worthy kind of as my mentor, and Big Game James told me a lot of different things about the NBA. Then I ran into Charles Oakley once I got to New York, and really on the defensive side of the ball, Gordon, it was Derek Harper. When I was in New York, he saw something and was like, you know, you could be a really good defender. These are kind of the things that you look for and different stuff like that. So I ran across quite a few players that really lend a hand, because sometimes guys don't want to give trade secrets, but then sometimes they're open. And as I went through my career, I opened up and tried to give away as much information as I could, because I enjoy watching good basketball. So,
you know, thank you, Gordon, for that. And Doug, what's interesting to me, you were so good at your craft defensively, and it is so much effort and skill in that, yet you can't always be successful. How did you rationalize that when you might lock down Kobe for 23 of the 24 seconds, defend him as well as you could? He takes a fadeaway three that is basically an impossible shot, and he makes it. How do you run down to the other end of the floor going, man, I did everything I could, he still made that shot?
You know, this is something that as I train my athletes, and I train my son also, and he brings me Kobe highlights of him dunking on me and laughing and stuff. You know, I tell him that you have to die to every moment. You can't keep it with you. And that goes offensively, too. If you hit a good big shot, you know, you see a lot of guys bumping their chest and all this. You have to die to it. You have to be a professional, and you have to move on. I understand, especially as the rules change. When I first came into the NBA, there was a little bit, you could stop a player a little bit more because there was so much hand checking and the physicality was such at a high level. But then they started changing the rules and you couldn't stop them as much. And all of a sudden, you know, I just really took to heart the fact that, okay, he's going to score. He averages 25. If I can keep him to his average, he had an average night. What we don't want is, you don't want him to get 40, because that's above average night. Good.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Doug Christie here with us. Michael in Loomis. Michael, you're on with Doug Christie.
Yeah, I do have a question, Mr. Christie, but first I want to say just thank you for the class that you brought to the organization. And, I mean, it was great growing up, having my son grow up and watching, you know, a class act like you on and off the court.
My question is,
what team member do you miss interacting with the most?
Good question.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. You know, Steve Webb was a really good friend of mine, but, you know, the guy who I probably missed interacting with the most was probably Jason Williams, because he was just such a funny guy. He was a fun guy to be around. Whenever I think of Jason, Michael, I smile or I laugh, and that's always a good thing. He brings humor whenever I think about him or I'm telling stories to my son. We giggle and we belly laugh, and he was just a really fun guy. You come into the locker room, didn't matter if we won or we lost the next day of practice, it was going to be energetic, it was going to be fun, it was going to be funny, but at the same time, it was going to be business. So I miss Jay Will a lot.
You know, it's interesting, Doug, if we kind of go on the timeline, Jay Will was a big part of kind of what got you guys noticed, kind of that first splash, that razzle-dazzle type player. And then you trade him, a popular guy, to bring in Mike Bibby, who I actually think made you guys maybe a better, well-rounded team. How was that like when you traded a well-liked and certainly a popular player from the fans, but maybe even internally, and then welcomed in Mike Bibby?
You know, it was really difficult, and I didn't probably understand how difficult it was until I got traded. Because, you know, coming here, he was one of the guys who really welcomed me in. I think I might have even said this story on your show before, but one of my first games with Jason, he's just dribbling the ball down. He's coming down the right-hand side of the floor. He crosses half court. I'm at the three-point line, and he throws the ball to me, and all at once he says, "Shoot it, shorty." And I'm like, wow, that's basketball. You're having a good time. You're competing. You're playing. And to see him go, it was really, really tough. But you understand the business of basketball, and that's where your emotions have to be a bit detached, and you're trying to do something better for the organization, for the team, and unfortunately sometimes it's at the expense of those who you grow to love,
yeah,
care about, and you just have to understand that.
All right, next up here with Doug Christie is Johnny, who's in Yuba City. Hey, Johnny, you're on with Doug Christie.
Right on, man. Right off. First, I'd like to say today, I'm a huge fan.
Thank you, Johnny. Thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I actually ended up watching that. Like, you had a show for like a sixth season or a sixth episode. It's like the Doug Christie Show.
Yes, my wife and I. That was a weird time, but it was fun.
So, you get traded to Orlando. They think you. I don't know. I don't quite remember the story, but they would think you were falling off, and you were telling them you were having pain in your feet. I guess my question is: are you upset the way you left the NBA?
If I'm correct, you're saying, am I a little bit sad how I left?
Yeah, I think that's how. Yeah, it broke up a little bit. I think that's what he said. Just kind of the way it ended for you. Yeah, your thoughts on that, I guess.
Yeah, Johnny, I am, because to be honest with you, towards the end of my career, I got with some trainers and different people who I really learned basketball on a different level. I became a better basketball player, but I was never able to show it. So I was never able to get out there and demonstrate some of the other things that I learned. And when you all of a sudden one day you're in a situation and you're playing and then just pretty much it's gone, it was kind of weird and it was unfortunate, but nonetheless, that doesn't, you know, do anything about the 14 years that I spent. I truly, truly loved it. But yeah, a little bit. It wasn't the way that I wanted to go out, no doubt.
You know, Doug, everybody will point to the classic and series that you guys had with the Lakers and the Kings. But of your time here, there were so many great moments. Is there other moments that stand out to you individually or as a team that you'll carry with you forever?
Yeah, you know, there is a bunch. I can remember one time grabbing a rebound and running down the court, and I kind of had two guys on the wings, and Scott Pollard, I took a peek back, and he was trailing me, and I just put the ball behind my back and took a step and kind of flicked it up in the air and just turned around and watched the big fella run down and dunk it. And, you know, playing against Phoenix, and I think that was our first year, and sliding on the floor with Jason Williams. But I was talking to a ref during one of our playoff games. I don't know if it was the Lakers or not, but the arena was just so loud, Jason. I mean, it was loud. I'm looking up, and I just looked over at the ref, and he's looking at me, and it's shaking, and I'm looking at him, and he can hardly hear me, and I just said, is this awesome or what? And he just smiled. He didn't know what to say. It was one of those moments that's probably one of the moments I'll take with me, because the fans were involved in that one, and they were just going at it, and the building was rumbling, and we were winning, and it was a great, great time.
There had to be a time for you guys when you were good, you knew you were good, one of the league's best, if not the best, and people came into your building. I'm guessing you guys pretty much felt you were almost invincible in that building.
Yeah, you know, there was a bit of air. I won't call it cockiness, but more of a confidence that, you know, when we stepped out onto the floor at home, we knew that we had that extra gear. That was the, you know, 1 through 5, you got that. Then the Porsche and the Ferrari, they have the 6th gear that gets away from everybody, and that's what we had at home. We had that extra gear, and that was our fans. And they would run people out of the gym, because all of a sudden, you know, on road, a 6-0 run is different than at home. At home, a 6-0 run turns into a 16-2 run, and all of a sudden, it's bye-bye, baby. Well, on the road was fun to play, but there was no place like Arco Arena, especially with that team, because it was entertaining. And I think that everyone came not only to watch basketball, but to see the show.
All right, more with Doug Christie here. Bali is in Sacramento. Hey, Bali, you're on with Doug Christie.
Hey, Doug, I'm a big fan of yours. I always try to emulate your tenacious defense when I play pickup basketball. I was wondering if you could provide me with any, like, tips or advice on how to become a better defender in basketball.
Wow.
Yeah, you know, great, great question. You know, basketball is, the defensive end, is all really about effort. But, Bali, more than anything, one thing that I learned is the defensive end is about position also. If you're in the right position, what you're trying to do is you're trying to get the player not to do that thing that they like to do the best. So one thing that I always did is I studied scouting reports. I understand what a guy likes to do, and then I'm just going to try to make it as uncomfortable for him and put him in a position that he doesn't like. And defense is about helping each other. And if you can give the effort on the defensive end, be in the right position, and then through drills and different things like that, you learn how to anticipate. And that just kind of goes along with defense. And when you can put all of those things together, that anticipation, you know, being in the right position and giving that energy, you can really, really become a good defensive player. It's hard because it's the energy level that you have to bring every night. But it's not as hard if you understand the game, you understand your opponent, and you're in the right position.
You're training guys now, Doug. You have any interest in coaching?
Yeah, I would love to get into coaching, actually. It's something I just have a passion. I think it's funny because I'm always talking to my son. He's just turned 12. But, you know, I was a pretty good player, but I think that I'm a better teacher and coach than I was a player. You know, you got your Phil Jacksons, a lot of different guys. They were good players, but as a coach, they're able to transcend and they're able to communicate. And I think that that's one of the things that I do well is I'm able to get across the point that needs to be getting across to the players in a way that they can receive it, and it galvanizes for that individual. Because a lot of times coming up as a player, you know, they gave you that cookie cutter thing, and it was for everybody, Jason. But basketball isn't like that. Each individual, you have to motivate them differently, and you have to talk to them differently. And that's something that from Coach Adelman, from Coachy, Pete Carrillo, all the different coaches that I had, I tried to take some from them, and hopefully when that time comes, I do well at it.
Well, Doug, we're running a bit short on time. We have so many people that would love to talk to you, and we've got a lot of texts. I want to be respectful of your time. If we could carry you over, we'd love to, but if you have to go on with all the things you got going on, we'd also appreciate that too. So I just kind of want to have that open invite if you'd love to hang with us for a few more minutes.
Oh, yeah, I'm fine, Jason. You got me. We'll roll.
All right, well, perfect. That is awesome. Doug Christie, he is as good as it gets. We will take a quick break here. We will come back. We will check in with Doug Christie. More of you that want to have questions for Doug, they're all lined up here. A lot of people are texting. Doug has been so good with his time and some really good information out there from Doug Christie. We'll continue with that and more of the Jason Ross Show here on CBS Sports 1140.